FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and it's June 20th, 2017. First 6 months of the year almost gone. And where are we now in the markets? What is the future of the dollar? What's the stock market story? Is it going to keep going up and up and up to the moon, or will it fall back to reality? Well, one of the things you need to think about when you're trying to figure out the future, because as a wise sage once said, prediction is very hard, especially when you're dealing with the future, is cycles. And for that, we always turn to our good friend Eric Haddock over at InsideTrack.com. That's InsideTrack.com. track.com. And by the way, if you got a question for Eric or myself, shoot me off an email, kl@carrielutz.com. Eric, welcome back. It's great to have you on again.
Oh, it's great to be back, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
As always. So, hey, we're in a situation. I was just reading your latest missive, and you're thinking that the long vaulted stock market rallies, bull market, if you will, we're getting to a peak.
Well, I continue to look at, from a broader perspective, looking at this year, 2017 being so significant from a long-term, multi-decade, multi-generational cycle basis. One of the things that I've explained in the past is a very consistent 17-year cycle, and also understanding that in the context of what I call a cycle progression indicator, where cycles will alternate between lows for a certain amount of time, a certain number of frequencies, and then switch up to highs, go through a similar progression, kind of like a sine wave going above and below the zero line. But when you look at this 17-year cycle and you go back to really the late 1800s with a significant low in 1898, then in 1915, then the most significant low in 1932, 17 years later, you saw a higher low in 1949, and then the market took off into really a full-blown bull market, and that's when this cycle flips to highs. And 17 years after that 49 low, we saw a major peak in 1966. 17 years after that was the final high in a congested phase, about a 17-year congestion phase in 1983. About a year and a half later, it broke through that and shot up to the peak in 2000, 17 years after the 83 high. And we know how significant the 2000 peak was. And now here we are, 2017, the next phase of that 17-year cycle, when I think we could see a multi-year high take hold. But I never look at just one cycle or one indicator. It's only when there's a great synergy of them converging at the same point or during the same time frame that then I begin to take notice. And one of the other very consistent and very significant cycles that I have been watching, and that's pretty well known, and that's kind of a decennial cycle, a 10-year cycle, where the market does similar things during the different years of each decade. And, I kind of traced back just even on a global basis, but going all the way back to 1857 and the panic of 1857. And that 7 and 8 year of the decade has timed so many panics and declines in the market that it's hard to ignore that pattern. And you even jump ahead to the panic of 1907, which led into 1908. And were it not for J.P. Morgan and some others, that the entire banking system may have collapsed. Of course, that's what led to the Federal Reserve a few years later, but that's, you know, a debate for a different...
let's not go there.
But then in 1917, you saw a stock crash, about a 40% drop from peaks in late 1916. In 1937, 38, you saw the second stock market crash, which, were it not for the 29 to 32 crash, that 1937-38 crash would be one of the worst on record. But then just coming forward from that, every 10 years, and then some of it was global oriented. In 47-48, you had an all-out economic crisis in the UK and with the sterling, which creeped into global markets. 57-58, the Eisenhower recession, but all the way forward to 2007, 2007, 2008. I think we all remember that pretty fresh in our minds. And here we are into 2017, 2018, the next phase of that decennial cycle. And so that's another very significant one that's got my attention. And then there's a lot of more immediate and shorter term factors, but that decennial cycle, I should go back to that one second, the time frame that was very consistently the most bearish, the most vulnerable, was between July and November of the 7 year. So we're coming into that time frame right now. And I'm just watching a lot of this very closely. Haven't seen any powerful signs of a top yet, although the Dow Jones Transports is giving some early warning signs, much like it did in late 2014, much like it did in late 1999. It usually leads the turns in the other indexes by often as much as 6 months or more. But as for the other indices, except for the quick sell-off we saw in the NASDAQ last week, I haven't seen much to indicate yet that there is a top in place, but there certainly are some warning signs appearing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, so you got to be aware of this. Obviously, if you're invested in the market, what do you do here? Do you take some profits? Do you buy some puts, some leaps? What do you do?
Well, I think that it may be premature for puts, just because you really have to have your timing much more precise, and you want the timing for when the bigger moves are, unless you're really buying way out just purely as a hedge. But in my monthly newsletter, and when we've been looking at the more like 3 to 5 year time horizon and investors, just in the last month or so, we finally got the first trigger to take a little bit off the table and lighten up long positions a little bit. But there's kind of some trailing points that I continue to update, that if some of the key indexes break below those points, that would tell me, okay, it's time to get a little more aggressive with the taking some off the table and lightening up on longs. And then there's a sequence of levels and what normally unfolds near a top that I would need to see to continue to escalate that liquidation, and then potentially even looking at the short side.
Right. So one thing I noticed you've been following pretty closely is Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies. Are they too new to apply your type of analysis to, or is it just another market?
A little bit of both. I definitely view them, and when I'm approaching them, do it with a grain of salt or you know, a healthy dose of caution and even skepticism towards my conclusions. I want to see them really prove things and prove them over and over again to have a confidence level in there. But like you say, it's because they're so new and there's very little historical data, that is certainly a crutch. And also the liquidity factor also plays a role in the effectiveness of technical analysis. But there are certain pretty consistent cycles that you see month to month in particular markets that have been starting to show some consistency, particularly in Bitcoin, a little bit in Ethereum. The others haven't really had enough movement and predictable wave patterns for me to have any confidence level in. But what I was talking about a couple weeks ago was I thought that we would see a pretty significant intermediate peak in Bitcoin between June 5th and the 11th, that it's had a very consistent pattern on a month-to-month basis and also on kind of a three-month, 90 degrees of time when you look at a year as one complete cycle or circle of time. And so that cycle, which is as much a kind of a natural cycle that appears in a lot of markets, was telling me to look at early June for a peak. And so as we came into June, I was really focused on some weekly and monthly resistance numbers that I generate for the markets I follow. And those numbers, particularly on the monthly basis for June, were coming into play at between 2940 and a little bit over 3100. So I was looking very closely at that price level right around $3,000 and in the June 5th to 11th time frame as being the highest probability for an intermediate peak and see a sharp correction from there. Sure enough, it bumped right up against that $3,000 level, did it right in that couple of days time frame, and already took almost a 30% hit from there. And at the same time, Ethereum saw about a 22-23% drop. I had explained where in Ethereum, it's had a very interesting logarithmic kind of range succession, and I'll try to quickly explain that. A lot of markets will trade in ranges that you might see a particular stock trade between, you know, 10 and $30 a share for a while. And so that $20 range. And then all of a sudden, when it finally breaks above 30 and closes above it, within a few weeks, you might see it getting up to 50, kind of doubling that range, and then starting to trade a new range, new plateau between 30 and 50. And that's very simplified. And there's, again, it's synergy of any of these tools that I use, one or even two of them on their own, I don't give enough credence to. But when you see that type of pattern, it's certainly worth monitoring. But for a market also that's in its infancy, like the cryptocurrencies, you often have a logarithmic scale where it's not just going from 10 to 30, but, you know, that's, say, a tripling in price. So 10 to 30, the next range might be from 30 to 90. Mm-hmm. Well, Ethereum has done something very similar to that I was watching, where it's one of its first significant peaks was right around $50, and that contained it for several months. Then when it broke through it, it was up to $100 in no time, doubling its range. And then it found a range there for a while, played back and forth, and when it broke through 100, it was up to 200 in very little time, doubling its range again.
Right.
And so I was talking about, you know, it seems a bit extreme, but if it breaks through 200, we could be seeing 400. And sure enough, in that same June 5th to 11th time frame, Ethereum had taken off in since really, I think it was late April, but then again in May, and it attacked $400 and even intraday, I think it spiked above it in that cycle high time frame. And before you knew it, it was back almost to 300, a pretty significant drop. But I think that may be the first shot across the bow. And one of the reasons that I've described that is a bit more reliable from a technical standpoint is the dollar and the dollar index. And I documented, if you look at this year, and the dollar saw a steady decline from January 3rd all the way into early June. But it was, for the most part, it was a very rational decline, really just a correction of a multi-year advance that it's been in. But whenever it had its bigger slides over sometimes just a period of a few days, or when it would break a key 2 to 3 month support level, every time it did that, one of those two things, which is when a market's showing a little bit more extreme, it's when other markets start to pay a bit more attention. Each time it did that was when Bitcoin and Ethereum would accelerate to the upside. And so they'd be kind of trading in a nice range, doing a normal trend, and then all of a sudden would just shoot up on that, those concerns with the dollar. And that correlation is kind of what I'm looking at, because I think we could be seeing a multi-month bottom taking hold in the dollar. It had similar cycles right in the beginning of early June, but based on a lot more data and a lot more indicators, timing indicators, and so I thought we'd see a bottom in early June and a rebound that could last into September, and it just really made me pay that much more attention to the cryptocurrencies to see if they operate the inverse of how they have the first 6 months of the year. And that is, if the dollar is showing signs of strength, will you see some profit taking come into many of those cryptocurrencies? Because to some extent, they're a little bit of a flight to safety for some investors, or somewhere else to park their money when they're more concerned about the dollar, which has been the more stable currency for the last several years.
Right. Yeah, that definitely makes some sense there. I can see where the analysis really, really does make sense. So we're thinking dollar's pretty much hit its high here, or has it got a little more to go? Where are we at with the dollar?
The dollar, I think, has hit its low for several months. That it got, and the thing is, too, I was one of the kind of not analogies, but similarities that I was showing in the dollar coming into June, is that if you go back to March of 2015, when it set its the peak that we've had up till now, it's retested that a couple times, but and spiked above it a little bit. But for all intents and purposes, that's when we kind of ushered in a wide trading range. Well, immediately after that March 2015 top, the dollar index saw a decline of 23 weeks. Not a significant number in and of itself, but it became a little more significant when it rallied back towards its highs. And then in late 2015, early 2016, saw another comparable decline, almost the same magnitude, somewhere around 8.5 basis points. And that second decline lasted 22 weeks.
Really?
So you had this kind of wave similarity, and you'll get that particularly when a market is in consolidation. You'll get those types of that type of symmetry within the market as it's kind of tracing out just a wide trading range. And so when we peaked in early January of this year, started to sell off, once it broke through some key support levels and said that this was a higher degree decline than I had expected. I thought it was going to be a little less of a correction than it was. But then I started focusing on that 22 to 23 week time frame, which came into play in the first week of June, and that magnitude of about 8 basis points on the dollar index. And that's almost precisely where the dollar found itself during the first few days of June, having dropped almost 8 basis points from the January high and having dropped 22 to 23 weeks. So there was this very intriguing symmetry and many other indicators coming into play that told me this is a very likely bottom in the dollar. And then some intermediate buy signals were triggered last week down around 96.50. And I'm looking to see an initial quick surge in the dollar back up to about 99. But if certain indicators are triggered during that advance, it's going to confirm to me that a multi-month bottom is intact and that more upside is still to come after that first peak and whatever subsequent pullback there is.
Interesting. So it looks like it's coming back again. And what's that mean for precious metals?
Well, the one thing that I really try to stress, and no matter how many times I explain it and try to detail it from a different angle, I think it still is something for a lot of investors that it's hard to fathom. But it's the idea that on a consistent basis, the dollar and gold do not trade at a 180-degree inverse correlation.
Right.
You can't count on, oh, the dollar's going up for the next 3 weeks, gold will be going down for the next 3 weeks. And about a month ago in my monthly newsletter, Inside Track, I went ahead and detailed the moves, the intermediate moves since the beginning of the year. And about 75%, I think it was like 12 out of 15 weeks, the dollar and gold had traded together in tandem, moving up at the same time, moving down at the same time. Their highs and lows were often staggered by a few days. But if you just took the weekly trends, they were moving in lockstep as opposed to conversely, and that there were only 2 to 3 weeks during that first 3.5 months of the year where they traded at a textbook or stereotypical inverse correlation, dollar up, gold down, or dollar down, gold up. And so just talking about the dollar analysis and applying that to gold can be a very dangerous thing. Taking gold on its own, and particularly gold stocks, which are in a far more bearish formation than the precious metal itself, and that's another correlation that's very dangerous to try and rely on a one-to-one relationship there. But gold and the XAU index were telling me to look for a series of lows, first in early May, then in mid-June, actually the current week that we're in, and then again in early August. And so I think that we're going to see a couple-week low in gold in this time frame within the next couple days. And that the gold stocks have, the XAU index has also approached a key support level. But the interesting thing about that is that the XAU is kind of forming an almost triple bottom, which in technical analysis is one of those things that does not hold for long. There's an old adage of double bottoms hold, triple bottoms don't. And it's just the fact that if a market has hit a level of support that many times, it's pretty certain it's going to break through it. And so the XAU index has that type of level right around 78. Wouldn't surprise me to see an initial bounce, maybe a 3 to 5 day bounce from this latest test. Mm-hmm. But I think that index is going to break below that. And I've had some downside targets I published back in early February that are still out on the horizon and could still provide some bearish potential for the gold stocks, even though I don't think the metal has near the bearish potential. And my outlook is still that the third quarter of this year would be when gold bullion really starts to shift out of a bottoming phase since late 2015. And then from third quarter 2017 on, when you look back at that, I think that technicians will say, hey, that's where we started to enter more of a trending move to the upside in and through 2018. So I'm looking at the third quarter of this year as being that very important transition point where gold starts to undergo more significant advances and that the intervening pullbacks are far less detrimental as they have been second half of 2016 and then a little bit earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess silver will kind of move right along with it. you think?
Well, silver I see as being in between, because I think that, and even if you look at this year, that gold has that certain measure of safe haven status. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, say we do see some trouble in the stock market in that July through October, July through November timeframe that's been so consistent on that decennial cycle. Well, if you did see a decent sell-off in stock, something that's enough to unnerve traders a little bit, you could see gold have a pretty significant rally on more of a safe haven status. You would see at the opposite end of the extreme, gold stocks could actually get hit because of the stock equity aspect of their value. Mm. And silver often plays somewhere in between, because you kind of have this deflationary bent if the stock market's selling off. And so it gets some safe haven status, but if movement in the market is looking like it could kind of stress the economy a bit, silver gets concerned over that. So you kind of have three different entities there that, yes, when you've got a rising tide, it lifts all boats. And when you're in a significant uptrend or downtrend, gold, silver, and the miners all move pretty much together. But the markets only trend like that 15 to 20% of the time. So then you've got about 80% of the time where you're in wider trading ranges and consolidation phases. And that's when you really see the divergence highlighted more, to where they'll be trading on different factors. You know, the price of gold is only one factor in the value of a particular gold stock. Mm-hmm. And if there are other factors that are exerting a greater influence, then it makes sense that that would be what the value of that gold share is reflecting, more than the price of the underlying commodity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And it's something that is so hard for so many traders to grasp that you know, if I say that, like I did earlier this year, that I thought gold stocks had hit their peak in early February and they were going to see several months of downside. Meanwhile, I was talking about gold heading to higher highs into April and May, and I would just repeatedly get, that's impossible. How can that be? You know, how can they? And it's not that they move at exactly the same time to their highs and lows. It's that the magnitude of each move. So when gold stocks, the XAU index, dropped from early February to early March, it was a pretty sharp sell-off, even though gold the metal, gold bullion, only saw a little bit of a pullback. So they moved down at the same time, but the magnitude of that move was so much different on a proportional basis that then when they recovered, when both of them rebounded into early April, gold was heading up to significant new highs, whereas gold stocks were only rebounding to a much lower high. And that sets you up for the next decline, for bullion to pull back to a higher low. Meanwhile, gold stocks drop to a lower low. So when you look at that whole 3 or 6 month time period, you see a progression to the downside in the XAU and a progression to the upside in the metal, even though they might move similarly for a couple weeks at a time, similarly being up or down. But the magnitude and the proportion of those moves are so much different that you end up with two diametrically opposed trends when you step back and look at the forest for the trees.
Right. So you can't just put out a rule and say it's going to apply no matter what, because in point of fact, things happen. So for sure. Anyways, so hey, just a couple other things. So as far as inflation goes, are you tracking that at all?
I am, and I think that I do think that we're in a bottoming phase from where a lot of commodities are concerned. I'm still looking at a very unique pattern, both on a long-term basis, an intermediate basis, and a impending 3 to 6 month, 6 to 12 month basis, where I could see certain food commodities start to see some significant advances. I'm looking more out to 2018, but even the second half of this year, certain commodities, certain grains are even set up to begin to sustain more significant advances. And that's one of the things that I think is going to ultimately help turn around some inflation expectations. But at the same time, I still say that I believe oil, crude oil, energy will not see a final low until probably September, October of this year. And that's factored so heavily into a lot of inflationary indexes that it often masks what a lot of other commodities are doing until it starts to move in tandem with them. But so I think we're definitely in a bottoming phase where inflation and inflationary expectations are concerned. But I don't think we're going to see any significant up moves until 2018. And then 2019 is a year that there's a lot of very significant both market and natural related cycles that I've been talking about that I think could make the next couple of years very interesting from a commodity perspective.
Yeah. Well, hey, they've been down for a while, so I guess it's time. And Eric, so people want to find out more about what you're doing, maybe subscribe. Where's the best place to find you?
Well, the website is certainly the best way at insidetrack.com. As you specified early in the intro, it's insidetrack.com. They can also find, and there's contact pages there and whatnot where they can get hold of us. But we also have a lot of publications and articles posted on 40yearcycle.com. It's the number 40 and then the words year cycle, and also 17yearcycle.com. So can certainly get a good feel for some of what's been published over the last 5-10 years, even going back 20 years. And that's the best way to get a hold of us and to find out more about what we're doing.
All right. Hey, well, we'll have a link to your site in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter already, please do so. And take a look at the site. Got information from all over the place converging, things that you need to know, things like we're talking about with Eric. And we're also on Twitter at Carrie Lutz, and we're also on Facebook, Financial Survival Network. Eric, thanks so much for being on as always, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me back, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.